Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Vampire Crusader by Dan Davis. Narrated by John Lee. Chapter 1. The Oath. Riders galloped away from Ashbury Manor House at dawn. I had slept in the wood again. The shadows were long, but the first rays of the morning sun warmed my face as I walked to the house. Though I was tired, I hurried. My brother's crossbow had to be returned before he woke, as I had promised never to touch it again. It is impossible to sleep late when you sleep outside. You wake to the din of birdsong and light. Yet waking early has its rewards. The thought of fresh bread, hot from the ovens, made my mouth water. But then hooves drummed against the earth and men jeered from beyond the hedgerows. The clamour shattered the morning and startled a pair of crows into flight overhead, cawing in protest. I knew the sound of men with their blood up when I heard it. I ran forward, crashing through the mature barley. The manor house was not a popular place. Visitors were rare, especially since my brother had turned even more sullen than he used to be. He had a handful of friends, but none of those dour knights and lords would holler and whoop in such a way. Not at sunrise. Not for any reason. My sword and mail I had stashed in a chest back at my woodland camp. The crossbow in my hands was useless because Martha had lost the last of the bolts in the undergrowth. I tossed it and ran on. The only weapon I had was my dagger. From the noise of the hooves and whinnying and the cries of the men, I guessed there were 5 or 10 of them galloping off. By the time I pushed through the hedge onto the road, they were almost away. The last rider glanced back as he disappeared beyond the hill on the wooded road to Lichfield. He was a knight dressed in mail with a shield slung across his back. His surcoat was red. I could make out no further detail, and yet something about him was familiar. But he was in shadow, and then he was gone. I ran to the boundary of the manor house and leapt the dry stone wall and ditch. My brother's horses whinnied from the stables on the other side of the house. None of the dogs barked. The hall door was open. A splintered hole had been hacked through the centre. The doorway was a black void. I threw myself into the great hall. The stench of warm blood and torn bowels was overwhelming. I retched. The mutilated bodies of the servants lay all over. The old, the young, the men and the women had all been dragged into the hall and slaughtered. I knelt by a few, hoping that some would yet live. Most were still warm to the touch, but their wounds were terrible. Throats gouged out, bellies slit open, daggers punched through the eyes. There were no survivors. The fire was unlit and the windows shuttered, so I could not see clearly, but none of the dead appeared to be my brother, his wife, or their children. A noise, from the floor above, no more than a faint scraping upon the boards. I gripped my dagger and ran through the great hall, through to the rooms beyond, crying out for Henry and for Isabella. There were more bodies lying in the passage to the pantry and buttery, but I went the other way, into the parlour. Streaks of blood led through the door out to the stable, and more stained the stairway up to the solar. I leapt up the stairs, ran through the solar and barged through the open door to their bedchamber. I froze.
"Isabella!"
I cried. She lay on her back by the bed in a pool of blood. It soaked her dress, and her eyes had rolled up, the lids half closed. A jagged gash had ripped through one shoulder and half her neck was in tatters. The splintered edge of her collarbone jutted from the wet, sucking wound. I knelt in her blood and lifted the back of her head with one hand. Only the fact that blood flowed and bubbled from the lacerations suggested she had not yet died. But there was no chance that she would live.
"Henry,"
Isabella mumbled, her eyes flickering open.
"It is Richard."
I clutched her hand in mine, her skin as cold and white as marble.
"Richard,"
her voice a whisper, her eyes unfocused. "What happened? Who were those men?" Her eyes stared through me, unseeing. Or perhaps she saw death. Blood had been flung about the room, sprays of it reaching the painted ceiling above us. I could taste it in the air. Yet there was no other body.
"Where is Henry, my lady? Where is your husband?" Gone,
she whispered.
Slain.
The children, I said, though I did not want to ask. She squeezed her eyes shut.
He killed them.
She sobbed, and blood streamed from her mouth.
Oh, God! He killed my babies!
I struggled for breath.
Who? Satan himself!
There was blood in her voice, and she coughed, struggling for breath. Perhaps I should have told her that she would soon see her sweet children in heaven. I could have told her that I loved her, that I would do anything for her. But in that moment, the weeks and months of my romantic infatuation were insignificant, absurd, even. I should certainly have told her to lay still and held her as she drew her last breath. Instead of compassion, I was full of outrage and wrath. All I wanted was to destroy.
Who do you name as Satan?
I demanded, lifting her head up further. Isabella, who were those men? Her head rolled back, and I grasped it and held it up to mine. My voice rose.
Isabella!
Her eyes flickered open and she breathed, shuddering, then coughed a spray of blood.
Richard!
Her voice was weak, confused. She had always been so slight, so delicate, but she clung on to the last moments of her life.
I am here.
I squeezed her cold hand, blinking away tears.
Richard!
Her voice was so quiet, I stilled my breath to hear it.
Richard! It was William!
She coughed more blood, fighting for breath. I struggled to understand. I had assumed that war had come to Derbyshire, that the Welsh had attacked across the border, or the Scots had somehow raided this far south.
William!
Earl William de Ferrers did this. I should not have been quite so surprised.
Richard!
She said, grasping my arm with desperate strength. She opened her beautiful eyes wide to look deep into mine.
Richard, you must avenge your brother's death. Avenge the death of his children.
I will, my lady.
Swear it.
I shall not rest. I shall not live. I shall not die until William lies dead by my sword. This I swear to you and to Almighty God with all my heart. Her mouth twitched.
Amen.
She died. Her last breath, a sigh that was stoppered with blood. I held her as she choked and drowned on what little blood remained in her body. It was 1190. In the 800 years since that day, I have travelled the world in pursuit of my enemy, William de Ferrers. Many times, over many centuries, and in many lands, I fought him. William left a trail of horror in his wake. I did my duty to avenge all those that he and his followers slaughtered. I spent centuries hunting and destroying the monsters that he made. Always he made more. Wherever there was great death and evil in the world, William was never far. I fought him in the New World, the Far East, and in Napoleon's Europe. I tracked him through the horrors of the Black Death and the overwhelming destruction on the Eastern Front. He was crusader, outlaw, Khan. He was a count, a cavalier, and a cardinal. William was a murderer, a devil, a vampire. My brother Henry lay eviscerated, beheaded and dismembered in the courtyard between house and stables. I gathered the pieces of his body together. His strong face, in life so often twisted in anger, was now blank. One eyelid was open and full of blood, as though it were staring at me in silent accusation.
I slept in the wood again, Henry,
I told his head, holding it in my hands.
I only just missed them.
It was a scorching summer morning. Yellow hammers chirped and warbled in the trees above as I dug graves for my family. I lined them up next to the recent grave of our father and the much older grave of our mother. The ground was baked hard, but I was young and strong and hacked through into the softer soil beneath. I laid Henry's limbs in the grave beside his torso. His guts I had pushed back in as much as I could. Luckily, I had not eaten for a day or so, otherwise I would certainly have vomited. I stopped and eased off Henry's rings from his pale, stubby fingers. One was the signet ring that had belonged to our father. The ash tree emblem was worn almost flat. I ran my finger over it, and I felt an echo of the anger that had flared up between my brother and me over that ring. I had argued that it should have been buried along with the old man. In truth, I had wanted it for myself. After all, Henry had inherited every other object, title and land. But Henry had flown into a blind rage at my suggestion, and had remained sullen until I acquiesced. By then he had already taken to wearing it. I scooped out a handful of dirt from my father's grave and pushed the ring into it. I found few remains of the children. The baby, Henry, had been barely out of swaddling, and Joanna was still often falling when she tried to run. There was not much of them to find. I gathered those parts together in a blanket and wrapped them up into a bundle. I placed them in their grave together, even though I was unsure whether such a thing was allowed. But those sweet children had been inseparable in life, and I wanted them to share their resting place. I knew I should summon the prior from Tutbury to speak the necessary prayers, but I was numb, and there was much work to do that day. The servants I dragged into a single long grave along the edge of the consecrated area. I hoped they would not mind sharing their burial. I was sure to dig it north to south and laid the bodies side by side, so that everyone would wake on the day of judgment, facing the rising sun. Ashbury was a small estate by any standard, but still we had 24 servants and labourers to see to the house and to the land. Many of the bodies had their throat and neck hacked out, just as Isabella had suffered. Almost all slain in such a manner were women. I found Barbary, Isabella's wet nurse, strung up by her ankles from a beam in the kitchen. There were pails under her that had the residue of fresh blood coating the inside. A funnel, still dribbling blood, had been tossed into a corner. Barbary's skin was as white as chalk, and she seemed to have been drained from slashes through her neck. It reminded me of the time I had watched a pig slaughtered at Duffield Castle. The creature's blood was drained and saved for sausages and blood cakes. I watched that pig screaming and bucking as it died, flinging itself around in mindless terror. Barbary must have gone the same way, but there were also teeth marks gouged into her breasts and belly. I cut the poor woman down and covered her up with sacking before carrying her to the grave. Most knights favoured the sword for its versatility and prestige. Others used mace or falchion or axe. I wondered what form of weapon the murderers had used to tear and shred the necks of my family and servants. Likely a dagger, worried back and forth. I was training to be a knight from the age of 7, and we learned the quickest, simplest ways to kill a man. That the murderers had used such elaborate, unnecessary methods was alarming. In the cellar were 3 more bodies in a heap. Their blood pooled along with the cider and ale, leaking from barrels hacked open and thrown over. I kicked the rats away from the bodies and carried them one at a time up the long grave. My mind was shattered. I'd never seen much death and blood, and it seemed the horrors would never end. I felt the world turn under me, somehow. When I had awoken that morning, the world had been one way. Then, after I stepped through the door to the hall, everything had changed, forever. The last of the bodies in the cellar was that of Mabel. She was a simple old woman with a twisted back, who cleaned in the kitchen and scrubbed the floors. Her neck was slashed almost clean through. When I lifted the body, the last vestiges of her decrepit skin ripped off, and the head thudded to the floor and rolled over once. Someone gasped and whimpered in the darkness. I lay old Mabel's body down by her head, grabbed the lamp and explored behind the remaining barrels in the corner where the noise was coming from. The girl hunched in the corner, her hands over her hair. She was the daughter of Osbert, the man who tended the gardens and brewed sour ale. I had already dragged his body to the grave. "Rose," I said, my voice so loud and sudden that she jumped out of her skin. I tried again in a soft whisper. "Rose, it is Richard." She kept up the whimpering to herself. The girl could manage no more than fragments of words. No amount of coaxing could elicit any further response, so I scooped her up as gently as I could. She flinched, but then clung to me. Rose was an ugly child, with prominent teeth and no chin. She had pissed herself, and was shivering in a thin dress that stuck to her legs.
"The bad men have gone," I whispered as I held her to me. "No one can hurt you now."
She buried her face into my chest and I held it there as I stepped over Mabel's remains.
"Keep your eyes closed, child," I whispered.
Not all the servants were killed. Walt and Marge had hid in the orchard, and when the killers had left, they ran through the wood all the way to the priory for help. I stepped out of the house carrying Rose and found Prior Tybald riding his pony toward the manor house with a group of brothers scurrying behind on foot. They were almost up to the door, and when they saw me, they froze. The monks turned to the prior, and the prior's face drained of what little colour it had. I glanced down. There was blood all over me. Poor Rose. Blood covered the girl, too, where I had carried her against my sodden clothes. I must have looked like a creature from a nightmare, and still she had allowed me to carry her away from that cellar. To the prior we must have appeared as the risen dead.
"Help us!" I cried.
Prior Tybald spurred into action and rode up. Even mounted, he seemed small.
"My God, Richard!"
The old man's voice shook, and his eyes betrayed the horror they saw.
"What have you done?"
I did not understand at first, so I merely stared in response. But thank God, he took control. He took control of me, of the girl, and the surviving servants.
"Ride hard for the sheriff,"
the prior said to a young monk, and handed over the reins of his pony. The prior kept his eyes on me.
"I did not do this thing," I mumbled. "There were riders on the road."
The prior looked disturbed. He nodded.
"For the love of God, someone take this child away from him,"
Prior Tybald said. Our servant Marge came hurrying after the prior. She took Rose away toward the village. The girl seemed to be staring back at me from over Marge's shoulder, but her eyes looked through me, into the past, into hell itself.
"It is a miracle that the girl survived this,"
the prior said, reaching for something holy to say.
"We should all be thankful for that small mercy."
I wanted to smash his teeth down his throat for uttering such nonsense. There was nothing to be thankful for. But the good prior was kind enough to have his monks and lay brothers help. They took over the burials while I sat in dumb shock upon the wall outside.
"You are the Lord of Ashbury now, Richard,"
the prior said, perched next to me. The new sheriff, Roger de Lacy, arrived with his men in a thunder of hooves late that afternoon. He had me escorted to the priory. His men even watched while I scrubbed the blood from myself and dressed in clothes the prior provided. The prior insisted I be allowed to wash before being questioned. The Bishop of Coventry had been visiting the sheriff. He came along to Tutbury Priory to question me too. The bishop was one of the most powerful men in the kingdom. Not merely a bishop, he was also sheriff of Warwickshire, Leicestershire, and Staffordshire. It was dark when the sheriff and the bishop sat me down at Prior Tybald's sturdy table. It was one of the few private places in the priory. As I walked in, I heard the bishop arguing that I be taken to the nearest castle, or anywhere that had a dungeon or with a sturdy door. They were sitting to discover my guilt. The bishop stared across the table with ill-concealed hostility. Bishop Hugh de Nonant was a big man, almost as tall as me and heavily muscled. I had always thought he looked like an ox herder rather than a man of God. But men so filled with ambition have little room in their souls for holiness, and the bishop was about as holy as a turnip. The sheriff sat to my right, scratching words onto parchment every now and then while we spoke. The prior sat at my left side and said little, but I welcomed his familiar presence. Before me was a jug of wine, and while we sat, I drank my way down the road toward oblivion.
"Where were you when this happened, Richard?"
Roger de Lacy was not much older than I was. The sheriff had inherited vast estates across central England. He was sheriff of Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire. I had come into my brother's blood-soaked manor.
"The sheriff asked you a question, boy,"
the bishop said, his voice a deep rumble.
"Why do you claim you were not at home?"
I sighed and drank. "Perhaps we should let the man sleep," the sheriff suggested. He was short, but with big bones and a lumpy head. Scabbed pimples and a wispy beard covered his face. His eyes were soft and brown and seemed kind.
"He will speak first,"
the bishop said, overruling the sheriff.
"Then he may rest."
"I was in the wood," I said, which was true, "shooting Henry's crossbow."
"We are informed you often met with a girl from the village," the sheriff said, glancing at the prior.
"Martha,"
the prior said quietly. I nodded. How often our secrets turn out to be common knowledge. I drank down my cup of wine. It roiled in my empty belly. My hands were shaking and the cup rattled on the table as I set it down.
"You have told us it was Earl William de Ferrers who did this evil thing. But did you see him do it, Richard? Did you see the murders happen? If so, how did you survive?"
"If your story is true," the bishop said, "it means you hid like a coward, and if you are lying, well..."
He sneered at me. He was trying to scare me, but I had looked through the gates of hell that morning. Still, I had no desire to be executed. I saw the merest glimpse of a group of men galloping away. I said to the sheriff, I did not see who they were.
"Ha!"
The bishop slapped the table with his meaty hand.
"What did I tell you?"
The sheriff ignored him.
"Then why say it was Earl William?"
He poured me more wine and I drank before answering. Chucking that dark, sour stuff into my stomach made me sick, but I needed it.
"Isabella told me," I said, "before she died." "A likely story,"
the bishop said.
"Very convenient indeed."
"Convenient?" My voice rose and the bishop's jowls grew red. I bit back my anger. "Walt and Marge saw the murderers, surely? They came to tell you, Prior. What did they see?" Prior Tybalt opened his mouth to answer, but the bishop jabbed his finger at him.
"Say not a word," the bishop said. "This man may be a murderer. Until we decide he is not, then he does not get to make demands of us."
I could not believe they could be so dense. "Why do you not ask Earl William where he and his monsters were last night instead of gathering about me? I swore to bring him to justice. If you lords will not provide it, then by God I shall take it for myself."
"A shame you did not take justice this morning,"
the bishop said, sneering. I lurched to my feet, bumping into the table, my chair scraping upon the floor and intending to shout. But my voice cracked as I spoke.
"I could not have known what they had done," I said.
The bishop held my gaze for but a moment before he looked away. The sheriff stood too and placed a hand on my arm.
"William has gone," the sheriff said.
"It is certain that he rode out from Duffield Castle last night. He rode with his 6 knights, armoured as if for war. So the servants say. He has not returned." I felt the anger leach out of me and I sat again. The sheriff poured more wine into my cup.
"He could have gone anywhere,"
the bishop said, sulking.
"It proves nothing."
"You were a friend of Earl Robert," I said to the bishop. "You visited many times. You know what William is like." The bishop pursed his lips for a moment.
"I do not see what my friendship with the late Earl has to do with this, and I am surprised to hear you, of all men, speak ill of..."
"I admired Earl Robert," I said, hearing the wine in my voice. "I was ever grateful that he had taken me away from Ashbury. In truth, he scared me from the first day until the day he died. Robert was huge and stern, and he beat me with his own hand, which I suppose was an honour of sorts."
"I know William," I said to the sheriff. "I knew him from when I was a child up until he went away to the Holy Land.
And the first thing I learned at Duffield Castle was to stay away from William de Ferrers. My first night in the hall, he coaxed over a cat using some meat. He stroked it, then he speared it through the chest with a long dagger and tossed it still living into the fire. He did it just to frighten me, I think." I drank down my cup. My hands would not stop shaking.
"William killed a cat,"
the bishop said and scoffed.
"Good. Cats are evil. Anyway, boys have been the same since time out of mind."
He must have been 15 or 16 and almost a man, old enough to know better. And William went to the Holy Land years ago, the sheriff said, and came back because his father was dying? Despite owning so much land nearby, the sheriff did not yet know our shire.
No,
the bishop said, shaking his massive head. He was in fine health, I said. He stuffed himself senseless with a whole mushroom pie in the evening, and the next day he was dead.
Never a heartier man in all Christendom.
The bishop nodded. Strong as bull, but you can never trust a mushroom. That was when you returned to Ashbury, the sheriff said, scratching away on his parchment. Your brother was lord by then? Me and the other lads were told to leave in the same breath William used to tell us Earl Robert was dead.
What other lads got thrown out?
The bishop asked. Curzon, Baskerville, Levitt, I said, tallying them on my fingers. Vipont, Barduff, and the rest. The bishop grunted.
Good families.
What did you all do to warrant expulsion from William's service? The sheriff asked. William brought his own knights back from the Holy Land. Proper fighters, he said, not whelps like us. He said he could not afford to keep us as well as them. The bishop shrugged.
You boys were his father's men. Makes sense that a lord would want loyal followers.
When I left, he said that he would make everything up to me, I said, taking another drink. They all exchanged a look that I was too tired to interpret.
What did you think he meant by it?
The sheriff said. I was the strongest knight, I said. I believed he intended to take me back into his service once the others were too far away to take it as a slight. I was wrong. The bishop shifted his huge bulk forward to peer at me.
Perhaps it was you he was hoping to kill last night.
I had not considered that. If that were the case, what reason would he have for slaying every living soul in the house?
There is no reason here,
the prior said, his throat dry and raspy with emotion.
Only madness. Madness and evil. Those men are devils, perhaps, or even Satan himself.
After a pause, the sheriff continued with his questions. You returned to Ashbury, and yet you sleep in the woods. I shifted in my seat and took a drink. It is a fine summer, I said. I made a camp down by the stream. I practice with sword and crossbow by day.
And by night you practice with young Martha,
the bishop said, smirking. The prior scowled at him, which made the bishop laugh.
Tell me, son, does her father know you are ruining his daughter?
The bishop liked to take local girls into his service, especially the poor ones with no family to protest when he started feeling them up, and worse. Martha is a decent girl, I said. All she wants is to learn to shoot the crossbow. We kissed often and fumbled at each other through our clothing, but Martha was too bright to give up her virginity to me.
Shooting your crossbow right up her, morning, noon, and night, I wager.
The bishop chuckled to himself. The sheriff coughed. A crossbow is hardly a knight's weapon. The crossbow intrigues me, is all. After his time in the Holy Land, Henry brought the weapon back from Aragon.
Along with his wife,
the bishop added, and smirked as if he'd been clever. Forgive me, the sheriff said, but I hear that you often quarrel with your brother. I understood that they believed William and I had committed the crime together, or at least that I was involved in the massacre in some way. Everyone had heard that I quarrel often with Henry. I remembered my father's voice.
You take after your damned mother!
Before I had gone to Duffield Castle, my father would often shout and batter me about the head.
You clumsy oaf! You useless goat turd! Why could you have not been like Henry?
And then there was Isabella. Isabella was far above his station. She had an astonishing, delicate beauty. She seemed utterly out of place in dusty old Ashbury Manor, but her family in Aragon had fallen upon hard times. It was enough of a disgrace that she was willing to stoop as low as a poor English knight. Henry wanted me gone, wanted me to offer my service to someone, anyone.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?